Hallo, schön, dass du da bist, hier beim Podcast Happy, Holy and Confident, dein Podcast fürs Herz und den Verstand. Mein Name ist Laura Marlina Seiler und heute wartet wieder eine ganz wundervolle, frische, neue Folge live aus Hawaii auf dich. Und zwar mit einem Menschen, den ich schon sehr lange interviewen wollte und aber immer nicht so richtig wusste, wann und wie. Und wie es der Zufall so wollte, war er genau wie ich zum selben Zeitpunkt auf Maui. Und nicht nur auch auf Maui, sondern wir sind Nachbarn gewesen. Und zwar geht es um Krishna Das. Und Krishna Das ist ein begnadeter Kirtan-Sänger. Und er singt oder er chantet Mantren. Und ich habe seine Musik hoch und runter gehört, während ich schwanger war. Und auch so begleitet mich seine Musik immer auch in meinen eigenen Meditationen. Und ich bin ein riesiger Fan und war ja so glücklich, als sich herausgestellt hat, dass wir hier einfach direkt nebeneinander wohnen in der Stadt, wo wir hier sind, auf Maui. Also Zufälle gibt's, ich sag's euch. Und ich habe ihn interviewt. Es war ein unglaublich tiefsinniges, tiefspirituelles Gespräch darüber, was sein eigener spiritueller Weg gewesen ist, wie er immer mehr zu sich gefunden hat, wie er durch eine schwere Depression gegangen ist, wie er drogensüchtig gewesen ist und dann aufgehört hat, Drogen zu nehmen, was ihn in seinem Leben gerettet hat, wie er wirklich in seine Kraft gekommen ist, was für ihn Spiritualität bedeutet und wie wir unser Herz wieder öffnen können. Und dieses Interview hat mich unglaublich berührt. Es ist einfach ein so tolles, ehrliches, bodenständiges Gespräch gewesen. Und ich glaube, dass für jeden, der zuhört, einfach ganz viel Inspiration dabei. Und ich freue mich so sehr, dass du hier bist und es dir anhören wirst, weil ich einfach weiß, wie es dich in deinem Herzen berühren wird. Und das Interview ist auf Englisch. Und wie immer gibt es natürlich eine Übersetzung. Sowohl bei mir auf dem Blog als auch auf YouTube kannst du einfach auf Untertitel klicken. Und dann bekommst du dort immer die deutsche Übersetzung, die wir für dich immer übersetzen, für den Fall, dass du Englisch nicht so gut verstehst. Und ich wünsche dir ganz viel Freude mit diesem Interview. Und Krishna Das ist auch auf Europa-Tournee. Im Juni und im Juli ist er unterwegs. Er ist unter anderem auch in Deutschland in 5 Städten. Ich tue all die Links zu seinen Konzerten in die Shownotes, wenn du da gerne hinkommen möchtest. Es ist ein tolles Erlebnis. Also ich kann es dir nur von Herzen empfehlen, dorthin zu kommen und ja, mitzuchanten, mitzusingen. Es ist einfach wundervoll. Wie gesagt, die Links findest du alle in den Shownotes und ich wünsche dir jetzt ganz, ganz viel Freude mit diesem Interview. I am so happy, delighted and grateful that I have Krishna Das on the podcast today here on beautiful Hawaii. Thank you so much for taking the time and being here to talk a little bit. So I think your history, your story is worth a book. I mean, there is a book written about you already. So
I should know, I wrote it.
Yeah. So I would love to, for everyone who's listening right now, to dive a little bit into your personal story, to your history, because I think it's really fascinating and a beautiful story of maybe awakening or of your own spiritual path. So maybe we can go back to the moment when you, maybe when you went to India. Is that a good moment to start with?
No, not really. I think it starts earlier than that. It starts when you recognize that that the things that are in your life and the things that are in everybody else's life around you and seem to make them happy, those things don't make you happy. And and then you have a few options, you know, either you close off that place in yourself and just keep moving forward in a blind way, or you find you can't close that off, and then it becomes the most important thing in your life to find out what's missing from your life. And that's what happened to me.
When was that?
You know, it's hard to pinpoint. On some level, I always felt different than the people around me in crazy ways. For instance, I loved my friends so much. They never seemed to love me back the same way. The friendship was always very important for me. The love and the connection and the trust and the play was always very powerful for me. I needed that. But I kept noticing that though, as a rule, in a general way, it didn't mean as much to them. It was a strange feeling. Okay. And I think ultimately what I had to do, what I had to find, was something that responded fully to my longing. Mm. And something that fulfilled my heart completely. And I couldn't find that in the people around me. I couldn't find that in the world around me at the time. And then I started reading books, and one of the first books I read was a book on Buddhism, and I was still in high school. And I remember it's right at the beginning of the book. It said, Buddha believed that your enlightenment is up to you. And as a kid, what's up to you, right? You do what everybody tells you to do, or you get in trouble. So I went, whoa, up to me? Something's up to me? I want this. So I got more into that, and then that autobiography of a yogi showed up, and the Gospel of Ramakrishna, and Zen and Japanese culture. Those were the books that were around at the time. There was also a book on yoga called Yoga for Health by some guy, I don't know, right? And that was about it. And then, you know, a couple of swamis came to America. I started visiting them, but nobody lit me up. And then I met Ram Dass. And that was when everything became real for me. And in fact, the moment I walked into the room where Ram Dass was, I had driven up to see him at his father's estate up in New Hampshire. The moment I walked into the room, without eye contact, without a word being spoken, something in me just went, I knew that whatever it is I was looking for was real. It wasn't just a book story, because, you know, anybody can write a book. It was real, it was in the world, and you could find it. And that was life-changing. That was the beginning of the whole other thing.
Would you say it was the aura of Ram Dass, or just the feeling?
It was my guru. That's what it was. And it was coming through Ram Dass. He had just come back from his first visit to India, and he was lit up. I mean, he was so immersed in Maharaji that it just was flowing through him. It was you couldn't miss it. It was fantastic.
That's beautiful.
And so then, after about a year and a half traveling around with him, I went to meet Maharaji in India. And I stayed for 2.5 years.
Wow. Yeah. Was it planned to stay that long? Or?
No, I planned to stay the rest of my life.
Okay.
As far as I knew, I was gone. I gave everything away. I sold my guitar, sold my record collection. I gave my jeans away.
How was that for you? I mean, especially in the States, in Germany as well, people are very much attached to their belongings, to what they possess.
I couldn't give them away fast enough. Yeah. I was so happy. I was so excited to be gone and to be finished with America.
Okay, let's take me to the day you were at the airport.
Yeah.
Flying to India.
I had about...
The young...
Yeah.
Then Krishna Das,
probably. Yeah, no, I had a backpack, a small little backpack, and a couple of books. And me and my friend, we were going to London, and then we were going to catch a cheap flight from there to Delhi. Actually, to Bombay. We flew into Bombay first. It was just wonderful. I mean, I felt like my whole life was in front of me, and this nonsense here in the West was over. Just shows you what you don't know, you know. After 2.5 years, Maharaji looked at me and said, go back to America. You have attachment there. I said, Maharaji, I'm just learning Hindi. Too bad. You got to go. And I thought, what does he mean I have attachment? I left everything. What's he talking about? But now, of course, I know. Everything in my life, from the moment I came back to America until this moment, is what he was talking about. Mm. All the bullshit, all the fear, all the pain, all the shame, all the suffering, all the horror, all the good stuff. But it was, that's what he was talking about. All that was in there, and it had to come out. Mm. You can't override your karmas. You can find a way to live with them. Mm. But only a true guru can change your karma. And they only do that if it's best for you. For most of the time, they let it go and they give you the strength to deal with it and overcome it. But it's it was hard because the only time I was ever happy was when I was with him. I mean, it was an endless, infinite, ever-deepening source flow of love. It never turned off. It never stopped. It never judged. It never turned away. It was always full on. So much so that there were times where you shut down because you couldn't bear with it. And then you'd be sitting there like this and then boom, get hit in the heart with a banana. And you look up and he's going, and then you're back, you know?
Yeah.
Just like that. He didn't teach formally. You know, he said a few things now and then, very important things. But he didn't write books. He didn't initiate people one by one. He didn't lecture. He was a siddha. He is a siddha. And siddhas, they just change your life. They don't ask and they don't teach. They just do.
How was it for you to have a guru or to be with a guru, like your guru? How was that for you?
Guru, to me, means love. Mm-hmm. It's nothing but love.
Mm-hmm.
So it was everything I ever wanted. Mm-hmm. It was the only time and the only place that I've ever felt that kind of love. Mm-hmm. You know, it's not conditional.
Yeah.
It's not based on if you're a good boy or a good bad boy or a good girl, bad girl. It's just flowing because it's coming from inside of each one of us, because that's where the guru is. So these days people have all kinds of problems and power trips, worries about guru giving their power away, thinking they have to surrender to something outside. We couldn't surrender fast enough. We couldn't, you know, this beautiful Rumi poem calling, what is it called? It goes, the guru says, the inner voice says, you know, come surrender, and then I want to surrender, and then the inner voice says, the price of surrender is your head. And then Rumi says, you know, I'm grabbing my head and I'm running as fast as I can towards it. Because everybody wants to be immersed in that love. But we all have one problem, at least, which is bad aim. We think we're going to get it from something outside.
Yeah.
There is nothing outside.
Yeah.
Absolutely nothing.
So would you say that your guru helped you to discover the source of love within yourself?
Absolutely. First of all, he showed me that love was real. That it wasn't just interpersonal. It wasn't conditional. It wasn't emotional. And it didn't have anything to do with me as a person, as an ego, as who I think I am. It transcended all that. And that's the experience we had there.
It's beautiful.
And the rest of our lives has been, in a way, washing the dirty cloth in our heart, and you know, purifying our hearts, so that we can truly be there with it, because there's so many issues that we have when we start opening up and trying to let ourselves feel. You know, there's a lot of fear, and then there's all our issues of shame and guilt and all the betrayals and the hurts that we've had, you know. So it's very hard to overcome that if you haven't really had the hit. On the other hand, everybody knows what it is. We wouldn't be looking for it.
Yeah.
It's very simple.
It's so true.
You know? But it helps when you have had the grace to have that, to taste that love. You know, you can talk about sugar all day, but until someone tastes it, they don't really know what it is. Yeah. They can want it, and that's good, but it's difficult. So
So would you say that one of the biggest problem in finding love is that we have a misconception of love? That we, what you said, that we think it's something outside and that we actually don't know how to find it inside ourselves?
I would say yes, but you know what? I think misconception is not the right word, because it's deeper than that. Mm-hmm. We have hurts. Mm-hmm. We have deep stuff. All the times our hearts have been broken. These are not misconceptions. Our hearts have been broken. Mm-hmm. And it's very hard to open up and put it on the line again, you know, if it looks that way to us. And the point is that it does look that way to us most of the time. But with real love, you know, I was once very much in love with a woman, and I was telling my Indian father, Mr. Tiwari, he was my best friend and my teacher, and he'd been with Maharaji for 40 years, a great yogi, he was a great yogi, and a householder, school teacher. I was going on and on about this woman, and he says, my boy, relationships, business, relationships, do your business, enjoy. But love, he said, love is what lasts 365 days a year, all day, every day. I hated him. I wanted to kill him. He just popped my bubble, you know. I wanted to kill him, but he's right. Love, we think of love as something that comes from someone else or is even between two people. But that's not unconditional love. It's what we are.
Yeah.
It's what's looking through our eyes every moment of every day.
Yeah.
So it is a misconception that most people have, but that's based on the fear that we have about being hurt again.
So for everyone listening right now, I can sense that everyone is like, I want what Krishna Das has. Like, I want to feel that. I want to find that kind of love. I want to understand. I want to feel how it is to be in that. Some people call it God, probably, or
like
the universe, or whatever it is, probably.
Yeah.
So there are so many words to a thing that we can actually just feel. So what would you say for everyone listening right now? What can we do, really practically, to connect to that love, to that source, to ourselves, to our nature, our essence?
Well, for sure we have to do some practice, some spiritual practice. There's just no other way. If you don't do a practice, then it's like trying to pick yourself up like this. You don't have any leverage to let go of all the stories that we tell ourselves about ourselves that we hate, you know? And the other thing is, every thought is a prison. The thought itself is the prison, and you can't think yourself out of a prison made of thought. So you have to do some practice. So the main practice that I do is chanting. And Maharaja used to say over and over again, in Hindi he would say, Ram Naam Kaane Se Sab Pura Ho Jata Hai. From going on repeating these names of God, as they call them in the divine name, everything is accomplished. Everything is made full and complete. And he would say, repeat the names whether you're happy or sad or angry or blah, 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 or depressed. If you don't do it, then what? And of course, we can't guarantee we'll always be like peaceful to do it. So you have to cultivate that habit. And the key, one of the keys to the practice, the way I do it and the way I share it with people, is that you don't try to manipulate your emotions. You don't try to make anything happen. You simply do the practice. You repeat the name either out loud or quietly. And when you find that you've been daydreaming for like the last half an hour, you come back. That's all that's required, is coming back again and again and again. And the more attention you pay, the more you realize how much of the time we spend in dreamland.
Yeah.
So, but if you're too busy trying to have some kind of nice, blissful experience, you're wasting your time.
And it's manipulating, sort
exactly,
of, right?
Yeah.
Like also, and with the head again, wanting something instead of,
The names are the names of what lives within us, of that love that lives within us, as what we really are and who we really are. And the repetition of those names will gradually but inevitably invoke that place within us. And as we change within, what we see outside automatically changes.
Yes, it's so true. Yeah. Is there a mantra that you chant that is like the one that connects the deepest to you?
The one you do is the one that works. Mm-hmm. There's no, they're all the same to me.
Okay.
They're all the same. You know, sometimes there's a commercial in America for candy bars.
Okay.
You know, one is Mounds candy bar, and it's coconut, and then one is Almond Joy. It has two almonds in it. So the commercial goes, sometimes you feel like a nut, sometimes you don't.
That's
so
true.
You use whatever you feel like, that's what you do. But you must do.
Yeah.
It doesn't really matter what it is so much as it matters the time, the amount of the sincerity of your search is what brings fruit.
Yeah.
You know, and that, unfortunately, there's no way around it. That comes out of the pain that we have. Mm. If we don't feel that longing that's so far unrequited, then we don't look, we don't search.
True. So you would say actually in every pain is also the gift for probably our spiritual healing?
Absolutely. You don't have to seek pain, though. There's enough already.
Yeah, I think so, too. You don't have to go for it. You can just look inside yourself and you find plenty, probably.
Yeah, plenty in there.
It's true. So you would say that chanting the mantras help you to heal and to find yourself?
For sure. I don't think so much about healing, but I understand that that's certainly one way to put it. And certainly it's true. We are healing our hearts. And I don't really even know how I think about it. I just do it now. I don't even think about it. But yeah, it is a healing practice for sure. It's a practice of, you know, the deeper we move towards our true nature, the more we release the obsessive thinking and the thought forms and the obsessive stories. So it works together. The more you chant, you are moving deeper, and the more you let go, you're moving deeper. So it's a two-sided kind of process, you know. And they feed each other, you know. So sometimes it's very useful to do therapy and counseling and talk about the issues that you have, because sometimes until we talk about them, we can't really see them. Mm-hmm. They're just like shadows behind us. And in fact, you know, that's why I started chanting with people. It had been 21 years since Maharaji left the body. And I was sinking. I was in bad shape. I was doing nothing. And I was very depressed, very unhappy. And I came out of my bedroom, walked into the living room, and I was struck like a lightning bolt. And I understood that if I did not chant with people, not alone in my room, with people, I would never clean out the dark corners and the dark shadows in my own heart. And the understanding was completely that this is what was causing all the suffering. There was nothing else that was causing the suffering except my own stuff. So that's when I started, or I thought about starting for a while, and then I got it together.
So let's go back to that point, because I think this is, it's really fascinating, because as I see it from the outside, that you had this calling to chant with people, to share your gift, which is this amazing voice and being able to sing and sharing that with people. But I think it's so beautiful to talk to you today when it's all done, sort of, you have made it. Mm-hmm. And to go back to the young Krishna Das, who's mm-hmm. sitting in his living room having this, I have to chant with others. Let's time travel back to that moment.
Well, I'm very appreciative that you think I made it.
I mean, I made it. I just mean that
it's,
you know,
all happening.
That what you did, you actually chatted with many people today.
Yeah. But let's go back to the beginning, because it has not changed at all. Mm-hmm. I chant now for the same reason I started chanting. Mm-hmm. I chant to save my own ass. Mm-hmm. Now, one thing I could say is that my ass has gotten a lot wider since I started, and it includes a lot of people now. But if I was chanting for someone else, mm-hmm. even to help someone else, then that changes the whole structure of everything. Mm-hmm. Then I have a motive, mm-hmm. and then I have to get you off. Mm-hmm. I'm responsible for you having a good experience, whatever that means. Mm-hmm. Now, that's not my job.
No.
My job's to sing. Mm-hmm. And I share my practice. I share the doing of my practice. Once I start to sing, it could be two people in the room, it could be 2,000, it makes no difference. I'm singing to enter more deeply into that love, into that loving presence, which I call my guru. Mm. And if I wasn't doing that, then the people in the room would not have the opportunity to do that themselves. Mm. Right?
Yes.
So it's new every night, every moment it's new. It's not, you know, and I'm so grateful that the universe has arranged to send people to sing with me. Otherwise, I'd be screwed. You know, what would I do?
Yeah, that's amazing. I think this is something really important, what you just said, that what we always try to do is to be responsible for everyone else's journey,
yeah.
and forgetting that the most important journey is our own. And by being in our center and healing ourselves, we actually help way more to sure. all the others than yeah. always being concerned that everyone else is fine.
Absolutely.
Which is actually, you cannot do it, no matter how much you try, right?
Nobody just, can you nobody yeah. can make another person
yeah.
happy.
Yeah.
Even Maharaji, who I believe was a fully enlightened being, whatever that means, I don't even know what that means. He could not make me happy. He could show me love. He could give me a taste of what it is, but I have to bring myself into it over and over yes. and over again and get familiar with it and learn to live in it. He said something really funny once. He said, I've done everything. I just leave the mind to you. So that's a very interesting thing. Because
yeah.
like I said, he's a siddha, he does. So he's created a life story for us, for anyone who he's connected with, that will allow us to do our work and purify our mind and work with our mind-heart kind of thing.
Yeah.
And that's beyond belief, you know, that's just extraordinary.
That's beautiful. Have you ever asked him, like, how he perceived himself?
We didn't ask him those kind of things.
No?
No, it was... you know, people would come and say, he would say, why did you come? I'm here to see Neem Karoli Baba. They'd say to him, so he's not here. Go talk to Hanuman. You know, he'd say, I can't do anything. Go ask Hanuman. You know, so you can't know how an enlightened being sees themselves, because it's beyond the scope of our experience, totally. It's like another language. It's like another color that we can't see in the rainbow that they live in. We're in these other colors, but they've got this other color that encompasses everything else. There's no way to get there from here through here.
Yeah. Just with the heart.
Yeah.
I was just wondering, because I think it's a great gift to meet someone who's in that space and in that so much in their heart. So I would just be so curious.
Yeah. You know, kind of the way I think about it, we're trying so hard to get up, you know, to like, but these great beings, they take a body and then they work so hard to hold that light down here for us. That's the only reason any of these great beings are here, for us. They're finished. Except the fact that we think we're suffering. Mm. So they need to help us. They want to help us. Mm. They have no agenda of their own anymore. Mm. When I was going to kill myself in India, in the temple with Maharaji, he called me over. I was in the back, and I was thinking I was going to jump in the river, you know. It's 6 inches deep. But if I got my head under a rock, I could probably make it work, you know. He calls me over, he looks at me, he said, "What are you going to do, jump in the river?" And he laughs. He said, "You can't die." He said, "Worldly people don't die. Worldly, only Jesus died the real death." What? Why? Because he never thought of himself. That was the translation. What he probably meant, what he meant was that there's no agenda, there's no me anymore in Jesus, in a great being like that. They're only here for us, for their people. So he gave his life for his people, he said. But he never died. It's just another way of seeing things.
And it's beyond the mind.
Absolutely.
And it's something that we cannot grasp with the mind.
Yeah.
I would like to go back to the spiritual practice you have. You said chanting, which I understand is some sort of meditation for you, right?
Sure.
Like a meditative practice where you're in the moment, you're with yourself, you're in your heart. Is there anything else you do for your spiritual practice?
There's a lot of practices I do. You know, I do asana, pranayama to keep the body strong enough to do this, because that's what I want to do. I take teachings from many other kinds of teachers, many Tibetan lamas and Sufis and mystics. You know, anywhere I go, wherever there's some light, I go. And I'm not shy. I love being around those great beings.
Yeah.
So other practice. I've done a lot of Vipassana courses, a lot of Tibetan meditation, things like that, different mantras and stuff. But it all, the moments of most, of the greatest intensity and the deepest practice has been the chanting.
What is your greatest fear?
The greatest fear?
Mm-hmm.
That when I take my last breath, I'll realize I haven't done enough. That I didn't use my opportunity as well as I should have.
Is this something you remind yourself on your daily basis?
I try not to think about it ever.
No.
Yeah, sure. I you know, I don't have to remind myself. It's right there all the time.
Okay.
All the time. Every time I sit down to sing, I try give my best shot every time. You have to.
Yeah.
And especially if there's 1,000 people out there, you know, you want them to like you. You have to give them your best shot.
Yeah, it's true.
That's a joke, but that's okay.
So what is your vision you have for your life?
I just keep singing until I fall over dead.
So this is what really lets your soul feel alive when you sing?
That's all I do.
That's beautiful.
I sleep, I sing, I travel.
That's beautiful.
And I sleep, I sing, and I travel. I eat every once in a while too.
If you would meet the young Krishna Das, let's say about 18, 19 years old, and you would sit in front of you, what would you tell him?
It's funny, I meet him all the time. There are so many young people, so many people that are just getting into these things and carrying themselves so heavily and so self-importantly and so emotionally. You know, I would just tell him, relax, man. Take it easy. Don't be so hard on yourself. You know, you don't have to be. It's a program. Take it easy. Take it easy. Don't, you know, I had an experience in India once with a very old yogi in the jungle. I was living with him for a while. He was 163 years old. He's still alive.
163.
Now he's about 190. Yeah. Yeah.
Wow.
Yeah, yeah. One day he looked at us and said, "You remember when Lincoln was shot?" Oh, no. No, you would. Yeah, you wouldn't remember that. We read about it in the papers.
Wow. That's amazing.
So he was funny. So I'll tell you a funny thing he said to me once. He looked at me, this is back in the 80s, And I was doing no spiritual practice. I wasn't singing. I wasn't doing anything. I was doing things really the opposite. And he just, I was sitting in front of him. He looked at me and he goes, "Ah, you're going to be famous." Right? So I looked up at him and I said, "And rich." He laughed so high. He slapped his head. And he comes up to me really close. He goes, "Famous." Oh, well, you take your shot, right?
Yeah.
So another day I was sitting with him. And all of a sudden he kind of looked at me like this. And he said, "You have to develop willpower." In Hindi, Icha Shakti. Icha means desire, desires. Shakti, of course, is power. But together they mean willpower. The strength to get the things you want.
Yeah.
So
Icha Shakti?
Icha.
Icha.
Icha Shakti, yeah. So my thought, my first thought was, what do I need that for? And he saw my thought, and he did something, and he showed me inside of me what he saw in me. Mm-hmm. And I went, oh, I was horrified, because I saw what he saw in me. He saw somebody who was floating, who wasn't going after the things that they, even what they wanted in life, wasn't doing anything, wasn't really living, letting themselves live 100% or even 50%. And I saw this. I saw that I was putting chains around my own legs. It was amazing. I truly had no idea. But he showed it to me inside of me. And that was a very big moment for me. Because I saw, wait a minute, there isn't like spiritual life and worldly life. There's just your life.
Yes.
And if you're not living, you're not living.
Yeah.
And you need to go after the things you want, or you're not going to get what you want. And then I had to deal with all the issues I had about going after the things I wanted. Fear of failing and embarrassed by wanting things, blah, 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 blah. You know?
Let's talk about that.
Okay.
Because I just think that many people are hearing the same thing you, or see the same thing you saw in that moment, living your life just on 30% and wasting it, like your biggest fear, to not living up to your fullest potential, to who you really are.
Yeah.
Because they are afraid. They are afraid of the judgment of others. They are afraid of failing.
Yeah.
So I think this is also what you said, the moment when you were in your living room and you had this moment, "I have to chant with others." Probably the fear kicked in as well, right? Like, or...
Yeah. Maybe, yeah. Maybe certainly there was resistance,
because
I didn't want to come out of the closet.
So how do you deal with it? How do you deal when the fear comes up? What can you say to the people that are listening? What should we do when we feel that fear of?
I'm sorry. It's very simple. If you don't do, you're just not going to fucking get anything.
Yes. True.
Period. Yeah. So if you let the fear eat you alive, you're going to suffer. Mm-hmm. You must do some practice. You got to start where you are. Don't think you're going to become the greatest person in the world. You know, everybody's going to worship you and touch your feet. If you could just get through the day without committing suicide, that's a great thing. And for some people, that's a big thing.
Yes.
So you have to recognize you have the fear, but you have to, at some point, you need to mobilize your willpower. And you have to recognize that the only thing stopping you is you.
Sure.
And all these fears are inside of us. They're programs that are running based on our karmas, where we were born, the culture we were born, our parents, how they treated themselves, not just how they treated us. How did our parents see themselves? It's a very big concept of how it affects us, how we see ourselves. And at some point you just get fed up with it, you know, and you say, "I can't take it anymore. I have to do something." You can't, you know, there's that old phrase, you can lead a horse to water, but you can't make it drink. The suffering, once again, and the pain of having that longing that's not fulfilled, the more you get in touch with that longing, the more you get the juice to continue and to find and to really go after what you want in life. There's nothing stopping us except ourselves. There's nothing out there.
Yes, absolutely.
Everything we see is subjective. And as we change our inside, the outside changes. You can't change the outside from the outside.
That is true. So in the moments, let's make it really practical. you're facing a challenge in your life.
Mm-hmm.
How do you talk to yourself, or how do you feel? How do you develop that willpower you're talking about? How can you create it?
I don't think willpower based on. I don't think it's enough. You can't. The willpower doesn't come from the outside, nor does it come from, okay, I'm going to get down to it, because the programs that are running will destroy that.
True.
You know, one of the problems or one of the situations of life these days is people have lost confidence in themselves. And another word for confidence is faith. This is a word that makes everybody nauseous at the same time, faith. But we've lost touch with that place in ourselves that's okay.
Oh, that sentence is so important.
Yeah. We've lost touch with the part of us that is all right as it is already.
Yeah.
It's been covered over with all this bullshit. You can't just go back to that place and move ahead. One has to find, each person has to find their own way through the maze of their own stuff. Nobody can do it for you. People can help and help you walk a little distance in the right direction. But ultimately, we have to walk ourselves. And until we're fed up enough with our limits, our limitations, and our constant obsessive bad-mouthing ourselves and putting ourselves down and limiting ourselves and hurting ourselves and judging ourselves, until we reach a certain point, it's very hard to move forward because we're swamped. And in the world today, we're so busy, it moves so fast, that we don't get a chance to really focus on the real problems. And that's why I say, find some practice that you can do. If it's 5 minutes a day, that's enough.
Yeah.
But turn the phone off for 5 minutes.
Yeah.
And just sit there and burn. You know, because nothing's going to happen. All you're going to do is see your thoughts and be freaked out. But you know, after a month or two of 5 minutes a day, you might start letting yourself calm down.
Yeah.
And that's a huge thing.
Yeah. I remember 2 years ago, I was in South Africa, in Cape Town, and I did Vipassana there, the 10 days Vipassana. And I went there, I was so excited because I love to meditate, and I was like, yeah, 10 days of meditation. So the first day was okay.
Yeah.
The second day, I like it rised inside of me, this mm-hmm. fear and all this. I could really feel like my throat, everything. I was getting so afraid of my thoughts and all the things coming. And I was sitting there like day three, day four. I was like, I cannot stay. I like, you know, then your mind starts absolutely freaking out. And it was so fascinating for me to see all this patterns the mind has to stop you to get to your soul
mm-hmm.
and to connect with all what is behind all that layers mm-hmm. of these false beliefs and it was horrible, really. And then on day 7, 8, 9, 10, I had like the time of my life. It was so beautiful because I really got into like this flow of energy, not all the time, but sometimes, and I was in such a bliss. And I remember how the teacher, he always said, that word really stick to me. He always said, strong determination, strong determination, because your body hurts, your knees are hurting of the sitting. And I just remember that this word was my mantra then, like this strong determination, just stay where you are. That's all you have to do.
Yeah.
And it was really transformational for me. I healed a lot, interestingly, by doing from the outside nothing. I was just sitting in silence, but it was so, it was such a transformation for me. And, but yeah, my ego was freaking out.
That's
out.
The beauty of chanting.
Yeah.
You know, it is a meditative practice, absolutely. And but you're doing it in a room full of people.
Yeah.
You're singing. Some people are dancing. There's music.
Yeah.
So it tricks you into paying attention.
Yeah, it's true.
And it tricks you into letting go of stuff.
It's true.
Without you really trying.
Yeah.
And you get some experience. Let me rephrase. Something happens, even if you're not aware of it. You're taken into a place where you're not completely focused on your obsessive stories. You may not even notice that, but it happens. And those are seeds that get planted in those moments that will grow also and bring you back to that place on their own as time goes on. So that's the beauty of the chanting practice.
Yeah. I'm wondering, the young Krishna Das, who wanted to become a rock star, as I read, true? Has he been spiritual by then? I mean, you said that already in high school you were like reading books and...
Yeah, but it was all intellectual. I mean, my emotions were very dark and very powerful and very limiting at that time. And I did want to be famous. I did want to be a rock and roll singer in a band. And I don't know. In my book, I tell the story in more detail. But on the day that I was going up to live with Ram Dass for the very first time to spend the summer up there, I had driven down from upstate New York with my two dogs, my cat, all my worldly possessions in this little car. And I went back to my old school for a Jimi Hendrix concert.
Wow.
And after the concert, the manager of the band that I had been with, when they were just starting out, came to me and said, you know, the guy who replaced you in the band as a singer just can't sing in the studio. We have a whole record recorded, and all we need is the vocals. If you come back now, we can then go out on tour. We can do it. And this was my dream. But I had met Ram Dass, and I had tasted that love, and I had felt something that I had never felt before. So there was no possibility I was going to do that. I got in my car and I drove 8 hours to go spend the summer with Ram Dass.
This is so important what you just said, because I made a really similar experience that I got a really good offer for something that would look really good if I would do it. But my heart wasn't there at all. And I think to all the people I talked as well, that sometimes it's as if the universe is testing you. And it's like, here you have this amazing opportunity, like with money, with fame, with whatever you want. And here is sort of the way of your heart. So choose, sort of. And it's like testing that. You if you're ready. And it's interesting because I had a similar experience, and it was, I also decided to do what's in my heart, and this is why I'm here today. And I just want to emphasize this, because I think so many people who are listening could be on a similar point. And they see something they think they should do because it looks good, or but it's not really what is for them the right thing to do.
Yeah.
So what helped you to listen to that voice inside of yourself?
You just have to be ready. Your karmas have to be ripe. It's not something you can't be what you're not. You know, and there's no blame. Some people will take the shiny thing with the money and the fame and the thing. And there's nothing wrong with that.
No,
it's just who
all.
They are. Believe me, I would have done that you know, I'm not, there's nothing special about me. That was my thing. I would have done it in a second. But I just ran into something that was already my dream come true, so to speak, and that's where I went. But there was no guarantee, even. You don't get a guarantee. Like, but there was one guarantee. If I had gone, in retrospect, if I had gone with the band, I would have been dead a long time ago.
Really?
Oh, as it was tough. It was close a few times. I was very destructive. So much self-hatred. So much. Levels and levels and layers of self-loathing. And I was very, very self-destructive. And really, twice in my life, I was very close to suicide. But I was saved.
What happened in those moments that you're still here?
I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to say it right out and simple, and grace, period. Nothing I could have done could have saved me. It was not going to happen. It was only grace. Literally grace. It's not even a question. It was absolutely, totally grace. And what do I mean by that? Well, one instance was when I was addicted to freebase cocaine. I don't know if you know about freebase. You heard about crack.
Yes.
Freebase is the totally pure version of crack. It makes crack look uninteresting. It's so much more strong. And that's saying a lot. And I was totally addicted to that for a year and a half.
How old were you?
When was it? This was long after India. I got all my shit done after India. I was too scared before.
Okay.
And then, you know, and in the depression that happened after Maharaji died and I missed him so much, I was doing many things that were, you know, very self-destructive. And so freebase cocaine was, I was totally addicted. And my Indian father, who I mentioned before, Mr. Tiwari, he came to America to visit the devotees who he had met in India. And we were very close. He was my best friend. I could tell him anything. And I told him everything, all the crazy shit in my life. And he was always right there. Never judged me. Always helped me through it. So he had come to Canada. And he was at somebody's house up there, a friend of ours. And I had come from California to New York. And I spent the whole night smoking freebase. And in the morning, I got on a plane and flew to Canada. I drove out to the house where he was staying, and I walked into the house, and they said, oh, he's in the room up there. So I walked to the room, and I walked up to the door, and I stopped. I felt this power, this field of energy, and I started to back away from the door, really, really, back away. And he was on the other side of the room with his back towards the door. He turned and went, you promise me now you will give up cocaine. Promise me now. This guy, you didn't mess with him. And besides, I loved him more than life. I couldn't say no. So I said, okay. From that moment, that second, to this second, I have never had the desire for cocaine. Not one second. Now, I know you know about these things. You know how people struggle with addiction. Sweetheart, there's no way in hell I could have made it without that.
Yeah.
This was grace. This was Maharaji and him. They were like one. They just saved me. Period.
It's beautiful.
Yeah. So, I don't know what to tell people. When people ask me, how do you do it? I don't know how you do it.
But I think, or I fear from what you were saying, what you did, which is different from what most other people do in situations like this, you reached out. You moved yourself to those people you knew that they might be able to bring you back to that place. You weren't sitting in your living
You're giving me too much credit.
But you didn't stay in New York.
Yeah, but I'm backing away from the room. I'm telling you, I
still
stopped.
You were there.
I was there because I loved him, but I wasn't thinking about giving up cocaine. I mean,
Probably not on a conscious level.
Yeah, definitely not on a conscious level. It got me.
And I think this is so important. If you want to change something in your life, you have to get out there. And you have to move away from where you are to change something from the inside out and also from the outside inside to the inside. So I think this is actually something which is valuable to see in your story that you need to get out of your story, you know? You need to get to find someone who believes in you.
But we can't make that happen ourselves. There's no button to push to make that happen. It has to come as a result of a deep understanding and a deep longing to be free.
Yes.
You know, and not everybody has. Some people, they're born, they graduate high school, they drink beer and they die. Yeah. And they're not here for a moment. Yeah. So this is very sad, but what can you do? Yeah. But there are people who have that longing, and that longing is grace in the first place. Without the longing to taste that real love and to find real happiness, we have no direction, you know. That's the whole direction we have.
How do you reconnect during the day? Because you have busy days too, you're touring, you've meetings. So how do you reconnect to yourself during the day?
Well, once again, it's not something you do, at least that's the way I feel about it. Mm-hmm. It's the result of the time you put in practicing that brings you back from the inside.
Okay.
And in fact, so there you are, Sri, you're chanting, Sri Ram Jai Ram Jai Jai Ram, and there's people all around you, everybody's chanting, and then you realize, oh, I haven't been paying attention, I've been thinking about something else. So you come back to the chanting, which your mouth has been doing it, but you've been gone. How did that moment happen? That you noticed you were in dreamland.
It's practice.
That moment is a result of your previous practice. That's the fruit of the efforts you made in the past. Otherwise, you're gone. You're gone a whole lifetime. And most people are. That moment when you notice you've been gone, you wake up for a second, and then you come back to the chanting, and the chanting generates the chanting opens you up more. Or that's not really the right way to say it. The chanting allows you to land a little bit more deeply in yourself. And then you're gone again. And then how long it takes you to notice that is a function of all your karmas. You don't do that with personal will. That's a very interesting thing. It's not like I'm going to chant and then I'm going to remember when I'm not paying attention. Oh, yeah? Good luck. You know? And it's the same when you sit to meditate and you do your practice, right?
Yes.
You're doing vipassana, you're sweeping through the body, or you're being aware of thoughts, and then you, oh, I haven't been aware. That moment is grace.
For everyone who's listening, including myself.
I'm also listening.
I would say I'm not a good singer. Like, I don't have a singing voice. Mm-hmm. And very often in life, we tell ourselves these stories why we cannot do things.
Mm-hmm.
Like, for example, starting to chant or joining one of your concerts I think, oh, I cannot chant and I chant wrong and everyone will hear me, like, or whatever. So what would you tell people who feel so inspired by what you do and your voice and your singing and the mantras, but where the voice goes on in their head and they don't allow
It's not
themselves.
About the music. It's not about the music. You don't have to sing well. You don't have to sing in tune. You don't have to sing at all. You can just come and do it mentally.
Mm-hmm.
It's not about the music. It's a spiritual practice. The music, you know, when a kid is sick, has to take some medicine, you hide that medicine in a sweet syrup. So the music is the syrup. The medicine is the name. If music was enough, every musician would be enlightened.
That's true.
Every musician would be happy. Forget about
it. Right.
So it's the name, the repetition of the name, that's the medicine that cures us of our suffering and unhappiness and brings us real love. The music allows us to go deeper into it, because everybody likes music. Everybody, yeah. Mostly everybody, yeah, likes to sing. And then if you watch people, you know, slowly get into it over the course of a night, yeah, it changes from the beginning to the end every night.
Yeah. And the feeling I have when I am singing kirtan is that what happens is that you really get this all is one feeling, because mm-hmm. of the voices, they become one,
mm-hmm.
and you feel so connected. I think this is for me the one of the magical things.
Yeah,
about
feeling
chanting.
That connection is very, very beautiful feeling.
Yeah.
It's a connection that doesn't have to do with me, because there's a lot of me's in the room that we don't know, and yet we still feel connected.
Yes. Yeah.
So it's a much deeper kind of connection.
One more question. In Germany, spirituality is something which is just people are reconnecting. They it's just coming back that people are actually starting to meditate, that they're starting to do their spiritual practice. But still there is a lot of people who think that it's just, I don't know, like very esoteric and very just with a, how do you say, the
stick.
Yeah, it's like, yeah.
Yeah,
so
uh-huh.
What does spirituality mean to you? And what would you say to people to whom it's very like woo-woo and something that they cannot really grasp?
Spirituality is the science of becoming a good human being.
Mm. Well, that's probably the best definition I ever heard.
Yeah. And the path to becoming a good human being is not so easy.
Yeah.
A caring, kind, compassionate person who sees, isn't so concerned with themselves all the time that they can actually notice other people's unhappiness and can maybe try to help a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, we're human beings. An enlightened being is somebody who's a complete human being. They're fully ripened, you know, and they live in truth, in the oneness of all life. That means all of us are part of one. And that's what it's about, you know. And when Maharaji was so unusual, you know, we say, how do we find God? He said, serve people. Serve people? What are you talking about? It's like, what? Okay, how do you raise Kundalini, you know? You know, he said, feed people. What? The idea was that he never told us to do things that were about my enlightenment. Don't think of yourself. That's not easy. It's not a goody-goody thing, like, oh, I'm going to go help the world. It's not the Salvation Army, you know. It's about recognizing that there's somebody hurting. And when you're at a certain point, when you're a little bit out of your own way, a little bit of the time, you naturally just want to help somebody. You'd rather help them than see them hurting. But if you're completely obsessed with yourself, you don't even notice, you know? And then we believe the stories we tell ourselves about what's, like, say there's somebody in your office, right, who's cranky all the time, never looks at you, and just, you know, and you have a whole story about this person. Oh, he's a shit, he's a miserable guy. And then you find out he's got migraines, or he just got a cancer diagnosis. And you realize you've been taking everything as if it's aimed at you, and it didn't even exist. It had nothing to do with us. How do we see that? How do we get to a place where we recognize that? And here's the hard one. Even when it looks like it's aimed at you, like a divorce or some abusive situation, which is terrible to work with and terrible to have, but even when it looks like it's aimed at you, it's really only coming out of another person's pain.
Yes.
And they have no vote. And they are creating such suffering, not just for others, but for themselves. A million times more for themselves.
Yeah.
And at some point, you don't want to see that. That doesn't make you happy.
Yeah.
But you can see how complicated it is and how hard it would be to work through an abusive situation. That's why practice helps right across the board, everything. It helps from the inside out, under the radar. You don't get to pat yourself on the back. Wow, this is a great meditation. Yeah. Yeah. Every day is going to be like this, just like this. Fantastic. Oh, this is so great. And you know, fuck you, not even meditating. You know, you're just thinking about it. So the real changes happen under the radar. But you have to put the time in. And like we said before, like you said, you know, it's getting to the point where you need to, you know, where you need to for you. That's how you get into it. That's how you overcome your fears and all the other things that hold us back. You finally recognize, I need to. I'm going to do it. I don't care. I'll deal with it.
Yes, thank you. Yeah. Before I come to the very last question, you will be touring in Europe.
Yeah.
You will be touring through France.
Actually, not France.
Not France? No. The only country you're not going to?
Not the only country, but we've been there before.
We're
going to be in Ireland, England, Holland, Germany, Greece, Spain, Sweden, Russia, Austria. But that's about it, I think. We're not going to France this time.
Sorry.
good try.
Good try.
Last time I was there, there was this heat wave. People were dying. Okay. People were falling over in the street. It was horrible. Okay. But I had I love France. It's just for some reason, it didn't come together at the schedule.
And in Germany, you are in July, right?
Oh, boy.
June, July.
Yeah, towards the second half of June.
Yes. Yeah. So I will put all the
dates. The second half of July.
The second half of July.
Yeah.
Okay.
Just before vacation time. Okay. Trying to get in before everybody goes away.
So I will put all the dates in the show notes for everyone
who would like to join. Frankfurt, Hamburg, and Berlin. Yeah.
Beautiful. Yeah. So I definitely will be there in Berlin. Okay. First row.
Oh, great. Wonderful.
And so.
Oh, good. And I'll introduce you to Satchin Nanda.
Yes,
he'll be there, my friend.
Thank you. That would be amazing. Yeah, great. And the last question I ask all of my podcast guests is, imagine it's the last time, the last day of your life. You lived a beautiful life. You lived all your opportunities. You lived full out. And there has been a technical problem. So all of your music is deleted. There's nothing left. Your book, nothing's left. Mm-hmm. I would come to you and I would say, Krishnadas, so sorry, electronical problem, everything is deleted. Mm-hmm. But I have here a white sheet of paper and a pen. What would be the three wisdoms, if nothing else from you would be left in this world, what would you like people to remember as your soul wisdoms to the humanity? What would you write down on this paper as your three wisdoms of life?
Well, I'm going to give you an answer you won't like. By the time you come looking for me, I'll be invisible.
With that, what you would write down?
You won't see me. There'll be nobody to write anything.
Okay.
I hope.
Okay. Well, that's a good answer as well.
But, you know, once again, you definitely would say, you know, be a good human being. Mm-hmm. Be good to yourself and be good to others. And find that love that lives within you.
That's beautiful. Thank you. Thank you so much for sharing. Thank you for all your honesty, your wisdom, just your light and the love you brought to
Thank you.
The
My
conversation.
Pleasure.
Thank you so much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much. Ich hoffe sehr, dass dir dieses Interview gefallen hat, dass du ganz, ganz viel daraus für dich mitnehmen konntest. Und ich würde mich riesig freuen, wenn du bei mir bei Instagram vorbeischaust, wo wir auch einen ganz schönen Trailer zu dem Podcast fertig geschnitten haben und mir darunter deine Gedanken zu der Folge hinterlässt, was dich am meisten berührt hat, was ja für dich vielleicht auch so ein Game Changer in dem Interview gewesen ist, was deine wertvollste Erkenntnis war. Und ich freue mich wie immer so sehr, von dir zu lesen, von dir zu hören, dich zu sehen auf Instagram und mich dort mit dir zu connecten. @LauraMarlinaSeiler findest du mich da. Und wie gesagt, Krishnadas geht auf Europa-Tournee und zwar ist er am 27. Juli in München, Fürstenfeldbruck. Und dann ist er, da ist er sogar zweimal, am 27. und am 28. Und dann ist er in Frankfurt am 30. Juli und am 3. August ist er in Berlin. Und am 4. August ist er nochmal in Berlin. Ach, so richtig cool. Und am 6. August ist er in Hamburg. Also, wenn du da gerne bei einem Konzert dabei sein möchtest, dann hol dir da auf jeden Fall flink eine Karte. Ich glaube, es lohnt sich wirklich sehr und ich glaube, es ist ein sehr, sehr berührendes, wunderschönes Event. Und ja, ansonsten schicke ich dir jetzt einfach eine riesengroße Umarmung hier aus Maui, aus Hawaii. Für uns geht es jetzt weiter nach San Francisco, wo wir nochmal Interviews führen werden und dann kommen wir zurück nach Hause, worauf ich mich auch schon riesig freue und ja, ganz viele tolle neue Projekte auf uns warten und ich hier auf Maui auch eine kleine Überraschung vorbereitet habe, dass erfahrt ihr dann auf jeden Fall spätestens im Juli, wenn wir dafür alles fertig gemacht haben. Wir waren auf jeden Fall sehr, sehr fleißig hier in den letzten Wochen. Und ja, ich bin voller Vorfreude, das mit dir zu teilen. Und ansonsten freue ich mich natürlich wie immer, wenn du mir hier auf iTunes eine 5-Sterne-Rezension dalässt und sagst, was der Podcast bei dir bis jetzt bewegt hat. Das ist für mich einfach auch immer sehr, sehr schön zu lesen, von dir zu hören. Und falls du mein Buch gelesen hast, schön, dass es dich gibt, mein Nummer 1 Spiegel-Bestseller, und dir dieses Buch geholfen hat, es dir gefallen hat, es dich positiv verändert hat, es dich inspiriert hat, dann würde ich mich natürlich auch riesig freuen, wenn du mir für das Buch auf Amazon eine 5-Sterne-Bewertung schreibst und anderen Menschen dadurch die Möglichkeit gibst, auch das Buch zu lesen, weil sich natürlich viele Menschen auch an den Rezensionen orientieren, was natürlich auch total richtig ist. Und deswegen freue ich mich, wenn du mir da eine Herzensrezension dalässt. Und ich freue mich auch, wenn wir uns im Higher Self Home sehen. Das ist mein monatlicher Mitgliederbereich, das Fitnessstudio für dein Higher Self, wo es jeden Monat neue Inhalte gibt. Ein Fokus des Monats in diesem Monat ist es Business und Spiritualität, wo wir tief da reintauchen, wie du Business und Spiritualität miteinander verbinden kannst. Und genau, und jeden Monat gibt es ein neues Thema. Also ich freue mich, dich da zu sehen. Die Links dazu findest du alle in den Shownotes. Und jetzt wünsche ich dir einen wundervollen Tag. Es ist so schön, dass es dich gibt. Du bist so ein riesiges Geschenk für die Welt. Und ja, ich danke dir einfach, dass du hier bist, dass du diesen Podcast hörst und glaube an dich. Und ja, alles ist gut so, genau wie es ist. Fühl dich umarmt. Rock on und Namaste. Deine Laura.